glad that you are here with us. If you're visiting, we're glad that you are here. And I hope that you can be back with us again whenever you can. We are studying normally in the Sermon on the Mount, and verse 32 in our normal study. This morning we're going to take kind of a sidetrack off of that. And I hope that you were able to pick up one of the sheets, extra sheets that I had left for you to look at. We're going to take up a couple of questions in regards to divorce and marriage and divorce that we were discussing over the last couple of classes. And we're going to take a look at those questions, and I said look at them. And as we do that, like I said, I want you to understand that you'll probably hear this, at least from me, as you've already heard it several times, talking about the design and the rule that we have for marriage. So keep that in mind that there is, first of all, there is that design, there is that rule that God has in place for marriage as we go through this. And that's the first and foremost thing we have to keep in mind as we discuss this, that there is that design, there's that rule for marriage. Secondly, as we look at these questions, and the purpose for this is for us to try to learn and better understand some things. There's, from my standpoint, I have no agenda here. I have no reason to cause dispute among people or arguments or anything like that. There was no reason or anything behind putting these out there. I have no reason or anything like that. There was nothing motivated, I guess, maybe a word, to put this out for anything like that. I'm not trying to single anyone out. I'm not saying that there's issues among certain people or anything like that. I'm not trying to pinpoint somebody or say anything that might offend someone. I just decided that some of the things might need to be looked at, and that we could look at these, and the goal is to look at this and to determine what truth of the matter is. And I hope that is a goal that we will look at and determine amongst these questions. I don't want, again, there is no agenda here. There is no anything else involved behind it other than, again, I hope that you took time to look at the scriptures that are listed, looked at the questions, and took time to go over them. And so with that said, we'll go ahead and we'll start in with the first question that's listed there. It says, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 28, which is a scripture we've already studied here in our study, it says, if one looks at a woman to lust for her, has already committed adultery with her in her heart. Is this cause alone for one to have a scriptural divorce, is the way we're taught? I heard a no. All right. Yeah. Not unless it's made public. Explain that. Okay. To what Sam said, I agree a lot of what he said. There's no way to know what is in someone's heart. And it kind of goes somewhat back to what we've already said and to what we talked about, the verse in and of itself. Jesus is correcting a matter of the heart. And it's a similar to what he was talking about, murder. And they were putting emphasis on the committing of an act, and not the emphasis of desires of the heart. And as I said, it's the same as murder. You can't convict somebody just because they say, I hate you, or things like that. If you're looking for evidence and things, you have to have an evidence that an act was committed for murder. Now, you can look at it, and if you have somebody that has a lot of verbiage of hate or threats, then that's a lot of things to look at that may be damaging to them because they'll kill you. But until you have the evidence that they did it, then you can't convict them of murder. So when you're looking at you don't know what's in a man's heart. You don't know what their thoughts are. We talked about don't look. You can see, but you don't have to look. Looking to lust is definitely a sin. But humans are not a good judge of somebody's heart. And we're talked about, God weighs our hearts. We're warned against judging by appearance in John chapter 7, verse 24. It may appear that someone is looking at somebody else, and it may appear that they're looking in a certain way, but we don't know what they're looking at. We don't know exactly what is in that person's heart. Yes. Sure. Yes, sir. Very well. Very well. Thank you. So to continue what I was saying, the exception of the word fornication, is an act. It's the word is translated there. It's an illicit sexual physical act. And so there's no physical act that's been committed. It's in the heart, and we can't judge, what is in the heart. Even though the word adultery is actually used in this verse, they are two, for one another, and they both basically mean the same, when they are used together. They are used interchangeably at times. And again, I'm going to go back to saying the same thing I've said before. If you're trying to use this, and somebody will try to pull this out and use this as a reason or an excuse, they're trying to get away from the rule. And I said, you're going to hear this a lot. You're getting away from the rule. You're trying to twist and warp something, to try to use something to find an excuse, to find a reason to get away from the rule, to try to fit what you want, to get away from what you should be doing and following the rule for the permanence of marriage. This is a way. Anybody else have anything else to comment? Kevin? Anybody else have anything to add? The next one, which basically goes a little bit further. It's very similar to the first question. Maybe a step further. But is the viewing of pornography or an addiction to it reason alone? Absolutely. I think we've kind of covered this with the previous question. It is not the act, and we don't have to necessarily go back through that. I will say this, though. Is it a sin? Absolutely. Must it be fixed and corrected in your life? Yes, absolutely. Does it break the trust and parts of the bonds and the marriage vows? Absolutely, yes, it does. If this happens within a marriage, it breaks part of the trust that you have between partners, and it's hard to fix. When this is found out, or when this happens, it's something that is terrible. And Sam mentioned this, the rampants that it has. And we've already talked about this before in one of the other classes, that it's out there and it's so easily accessible that it is so prevalent. And Sam threw out some statistics about it. And, just to add to that, these are several years old, but I just want to make mention of this. The industry itself in the United States is a $10 to $12 billion industry. Worldwide is $97 billion industry. The largest internet viewer age is 12 to 17 year olds. Over 11 million teens coming down into and I'll use this term loosely, Christian world. And I said, these are bridges are a few years old. People that will identify themselves as clergy will admit that 40% have viewed it, and in the last 12 months, 33%. And amongst, again, Christians, call themselves Christians, 50% of men and 20% of women said that they were addicted. 70% of 18 to 34 year old men at least once a month. And at one point, when some of these were coming out, and I don't know what church or what type of religious affiliation this person was, that they didn't agree with a lot of those numbers. So they went to their own group and said, I'm going to poll their group. 60% of the group within the last year and 25% within the last 30 days. Was his answers that he received. And I'm going to say, this is just me saying, I'm going to say that was the ones that are actually honest in his poll. For this topic right here, don't deny the fact that it's not, don't say that it's not here, and don't say, as we talked about in one of the other classes, that it can't happen. These stats are, some of them were like 03 to 06, 09, 12, 13, there were various years compiled together. So I dare say that some of them have grown, especially with the use of various technologies that we have access to, tablets and phones and so forth. Well, we just basically said that you cannot far as the scripturally used and for between the first two questions, say that this is a scriptural use for divorce. It's a problem. There's no doubt about that. Do they have any other comments or anything that they don't? We had one of the men's classes was on this, and I think it's very valuable, and I hope you were able to attend that. He's absolutely right. You can't fight that battle on your own. Next question. This pertains to an agreement or a statement that infidelity has occurred or has been adultery in a marriage. But both the husband and wife, they agree that they will reconcile together. They will try to work the thing out. After this occurs, the innocent party, if you will, wants to petition for divorce after they've tried to reconcile and live together because they don't think it's working out. They may have regrets or whatever for that matter. Can this party now have a scriptural divorce? I'm sorry, can I say it one more time? If he commits fornication. All right. Okay. What I would say is, like I said, there is the exception that's granted, but it's an allowance. It's not a command. There's no commandment for divorce, even for sexual immorality. Obviously, that's the only exception, but there is no command for it. The emphasis found in Matthew 5 and 19 is not a reason for divorce. It's a permissance. It's an allowance for that reason. As we've already stated a few times, it's possible if the best thing you can do is to remain married. That's the part. That's the, again, the rule. That's the purpose. That's the design, is to remain married. Sam alluded to it. We're taught to confront somebody that's in sin. If we want them to repent, we want to offer forgiveness if they do repent. It talks about that in Luke 17 verses 3 and 4. God's forgiveness itself should teach us, and motivate us to forgive others. And so, and we're taught about that in Ephesians 4:32 and Colossians 3. So we should long for somebody to return. We should want their forgiveness. We should want that straying soul to come back to us. So that should imply that you should want reconciliation in a marriage. The first thing should not want you to jump and run and separate. However, I will say this. It does not mean that the innocent is required to take back. That is the design. That's what should be wanted to happen. It is not required. There are consequences to sin. We talked about David and Bathsheba and what went through with him. He had consequences to his sin. Moses had consequences to his sin. He was not allowed to enter the land of Canaan. Obviously, they were both forgiven through God, but they were still consequences to be had. And I will still say that you do not have to forgive the person, but that is, you should try, the intent is to try to work the thing out. But as Sam has said and others, if reconciliation is made, if the agreement is made that we want to work this out, we want to live together, we want to work and do as we should and be a husband and wife, forgiveness is granted, and both agree to reconcile, to work through it, then my understanding is that the divorce now for adultery and for for that reason is now off the table. Again, as like Kevin said, unless it happens again. Now, if that were to be the case and you have another case of sexual immorality to occur, then we have another issue. But at this point, if they have come back together, if person decides, well, it's not working out, I have regrets, whatever, well, they're the case for sexual immorality anymore because now they have reconciled themselves together and they are now back as husband and wife again. That's kind of what you were alluding to. That's kind of what I was alluding to with the example with David and Moses. They were forgiven, but there were still consequences to be had. And he kind of clarified that a little bit, maybe if I didn't as well. It's kind of what I was trying to allude to there. There are consequences still to be had, even though forgiveness can be given. There still may be consequences added to that. Kevin. All right. Moving on to the next one. With the term irreconcilable differences, is used quite often now as when people file for divorce. It's used, spouses use it, attorneys will use it, courts, whatever. This is when used in the paper stating as the reason instead of adultery. in the papers. Is adultery, does the word adultery have to be in the paperwork? It's kind of a long question, so with a bunch of caveats, but does the word adultery basically have to be in there in order for an innocent party to be able to marriage? Also, does the spouse have to file the papers first? The innocent spouse have to file papers first to be sure they're the one putting away and not being put away, or does any of all this matter? It may be convoluted, but if you kind of read the question, basically, does adultery have to be in the paperwork, and does the innocent party have to be the first one to go down and file papers and make sure they're in the right putting away status? I think very active is part of it. If you wind up being try to set out a bond and come back later, you want a divorce question, Kevin?
Yes, I will say this to the whole thing as far as the question goes. Again, for the rule and the exceptions and that sort of thing, we got to look for the rule. God hates divorce, first of all. We ought to try to save every marriage, first and foremost. The first thing we ought not to do is start running for lawyers and courthouses and such. And I think as if this were to happen to somebody, a first thought in a couple's mind is not, I need to run and find a lawyer. The first thought of their mind is, I need to fix the problem. So if your first thought is, let me go down here and beat this one down here to get the papers fixed, you're got the wrong idea to first start with. The issue is we need to save the marriage. The intent is two people together for life. And if your idea is I got to go down here and beat him down here for or her, then you've got the wrong idea to start with. We're saving, the intent is to save the marriage. You're concerned with legal paperwork, and that's what we as Christians ought to be concerned with. We need to be concerned with fixing our marriage life and fixing what is supposed to be fixed. Now, from my limited experience and very limited experience with the legal side of this and courts and all this sort of, as Sam also has already said, you're probably not going to get adultery, sexual immorality, however you want to put it, on paperwork. They're not going to list that as an excuse. So you're probably going to get irreconcilable differences or something like that listed on the paperwork. It's just the, if divorce is the only option, if that's what's going to have to take place, if you decide that whichever one decides this is what's not going to end, Sam's also alluded to, it's got to be made known, and there's a time frame that has got to be made there. And I think Sam's already alluded to that. It has to be made known. The person has to state forth that this is the reason. There has to be, and Kevin made kind of part of that too, there has to be some sort of knowledge or admittance or proof or something that is the reason for it, and has to be a proof, so to speak. There has to be knowledge that it was done. So active process, active in the process, person has to put it out there. Now, if the person, there are times, and we know this happens, that the person who is guilty of sexual immorality, the one who's done the problem, has no thought, no desire to fix the problem. They do not want to fix the marriage. They don't want any part of it. And the first thing they're going to do when they get caught is they're going to run and they're going to file papers they want out, right? Which sometimes leaves an innocent party in somewhat of a limbo state. With the way that I look at that is you've got a legal system, and no matter how it works, a decree is going to be issued. It's the way it works. You have to have paperwork. The legal system is going to issue a divorce decree. And you've got to be active. And regardless of who gets the papers first, the point is that the person is out there and is active, and they've made it known that the divorce was for sexual immorality. And the papers that are obtained, the agreement and the termination was made known by the other party for sexual immorality. You have to go through the divorce and the decree. And it really is almost of no matter who gets the papers first. Some people will sit there and tell you that you have to file first. there's sometimes where almost that's impossible. There are sometimes where a judge or whoever mediating between the two will not put on the paperwork, this one puts this one away. The paperwork will read that they were separated from each other. They were basically put away from each other, basically stating they're both put away. And so, honestly, again, it's one of these situations where there's no definite, clear-cut answer. Kevin alluded to the fact that you don't want to put your soul in that position. I'll go back and put it this way. There's only one reason that divorce can occur, and that's for sexual immorality. God sees it. Lawyers and courts are on this earth. God knows things. And I agree with Kevin. I don't want to put my soul in a situation where I have to get up every morning and wonder. But the point of the whole matter is, to me, is instead of trying to figure out all of the nuances and trying to figure out whether this is right or this is right or this is okay or this is not okay, why don't we live the way we ought to live and do what we ought to do and not have to worry about trying to figure out whether and be the husband and wife we ought to be and not deal with this. And then if we have to, go back and fix the problem to start with, and not go through the courts and go through the issues and go back to living together the way we're supposed to be and put all these issues aside. All right, I think we're about out of time. We'll pick up with lesson 7 on Wednesday night. I hope to get into that Wednesday. Thank you for your comments and participation in the class. I hope it was beneficial to everybody. Like I said, there was no intent to cause division or strife amongst anybody. It was just a hope to look into, to learn some stuff and to better understand some things. But I do appreciate your comments and participation. I said we'll move forward Wednesday night. Thank you very much.